From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Lately, they've talked in the presidential campaign about the economy, foreign policy, tax plans, but where is discussion about religion in this presidential race? President Obama is a Christian and Mitt Romney is a Mormon, and how do their religions play into their campaign, if at all? And what effect are statements like those of Senate candidate Richard Murdoch, who said this week that he believes rapes result in pregnancy are something that God intends to happen, having on the campaign? And do voters really care? We'll talk about all that after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. It's safe to say that religion played a considerably greater role in the presidential election of 2008 than it has in the present ongoing presidential campaign. And in this Forum Hour, I want to turn our attention to religion and the role it has played and continues to play in the political battle between incumbent Democratic President Barack Obama and his challenger, former Massachusetts governor and Republican candidate Mitt Romney. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Barbara Bradley Haggerty, religion correspondent for NPR, bracing for Sandy the Hurricane. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, Michael.
I don't know if Pat Robertson will have anything to do with diverting it one way or the other, but we couldn't help mentioning
He does tend to do weather reports. You're right.
We also have Jim Donahue with us. Dr. Donahue is president and professor of ethics at the Graduate Theological Union here in Berkeley. Graduate Theological Union is the largest partnership of seminaries and graduate schools in the United States. Jim Donahue, good to have you back on Forum.
Great to be here, Michael. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, Jim.
And we'll also say hello to Michael Cromarty, who is vice president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where he directs the Evangelicals in Civic Life and Faith Angle Forum programs. He's editor of the book Religion and Politics in America, formerly served on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Welcome, Michael Cromarty.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great to have you all here. And Barbara, let me begin with you. I mean, the perspective here is both candidates kind of reluctant, maybe reticent even, to talk about God. And what a contrast to the last campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the striking things about covering this beat right now during this election is how conspicuously absent God is. I mean, when you look at when President Obama had a chance to talk about his, you know, his background, his convention speech, basically, the only reference that President Obama made to God was when he said, "God bless America," at the end. Romney, who had a chance to really introduce himself to the national public, mentioned that he was a Mormon only once, and it really in an offhand way. And he almost never says the word Mormon. And so what you see is this kind of stunning difference from 2008. And I think there's a couple of reasons. Both men have a lot to lose and very little to gain, I think, by talking about religion. I mean, let's look at President Obama. In 2008, he had a chance at wooing liberal and moderate evangelicals. He spoke their language. You know, you remember in 2004, he talked about, "We worship an awesome God in the blue states," and he gave his testimony or conversion story, and he sounded evangelical. He had this big outreach campaign to evangelicals, but there was a downside. If you'll remember, he got hammered with the tape of his former pastor, Jeremiah Wright, saying, you know, "God damn America." And so this time around, he's keeping away from religion. And I think another reason is it's not just that, you know, the Jeremiah Wright factor. It's also because of his policies. He's supported gay marriage. He's offering wants contraceptives offered in insurance plans. And, you know, evangelicals just simply don't like that. He can't win them. As to the Republicans in 2008, you know, the Republicans had Sarah Palin on the ticket. That excited the base of evangelicals. This time they don't have a traditional Protestant. As you mentioned, Romney's a Mormon. Paul Ryan is a Catholic. And the problem for Romney is that a lot of his base, white evangelicals, don't think that Mormons are Christians. So he doesn't want to talk about the specifics of his Mormon faith. He talks about his values that were developed at church, you know, family, integrity, hard work, serving others, that kind of thing. And also he also doesn't really need to talk about his faith to win his base. I mean, three quarters of evangelicals say they are going to vote for him. So in other words, both candidates are kind of playing to the middle, and they're really not talking about religion at all.
And yet religion has come up most recently by the remarks of Indiana Senate candidate Richard Murdoch, who said, I've struggled with it myself for a long time. When asked about rape and abortion, pregnancy, he said, I came to realize that life is that gift from God. And there was an endorsement by Governor Romney for this candidate, just as there was for Claude Aiken. So they're kind of coming in a different fashion.
Yeah, you know, and Romney did say he didn't agree with Richard Murdoch. And so, you know, kind of when these issues come up, they can often backfire. They can also come up in a way that the candidates don't want. You know, Mr. Obama also talked about same-sex marriage, he cited the Golden Rule. And he often talks about, you know, I am my brother's keeper and I am my sister's keeper. But what you'll notice about this language is it's kind of nuanced and subtle, and it's almost, it's not code words, but it's not explicitly religious, because religious language can actually backfire on both men.
Well, speaking of nuance, I'm interested to get your take on a couple of things, Barbara. We're talking to Barbara Bradley Haggerty, who is, of course, religion correspondent for NPR and with us from the nation's capital. There is, I think, and you've reported this, kind of a split in the Obama campaign, those who would like him perhaps to take stronger views where faith is concerned, and a fairly noticeable split. And there's also, in the Romney campaign, a sense that maybe he should put his Mormonism out there more, despite the fact that there's a fear that maybe not only the evangelicals will run away from him if he does, but also that putting his Mormonism out there will have the effect of making a lot of Christians who don't see Mormonism as a form of Christianity scared, like a lot of Protestants were afraid of John F. Kennedy. It's Catholicism.
Right, that's right. That's absolutely right. I mean, Mr. Obama, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is what I've found. There is a split in the Obama campaign about whether to emphasize his religion or not. And right now, the people who don't want him to emphasize his religion are winning. I mean, you see, and the Obama campaign might disagree with me on this, but I am quite certain that the outreach campaign is much, much smaller this time around. And basically, you know, they really can't win religious conservatives because of some of their policies. And so what the campaign is saying is, look, what we need to concentrate on is our base, not evangelicals, but our base, like women. And so we're going to talk about contraceptives and getting those to women. We're going to focus on the people we know that we can get. And so the ones who don't want to talk about religion are winning. And it's very, very dicey for Mr. Governor Romney as well. I mean, they do have as someone who is reaching out to evangelicals, for example, Mark DeMoss, but very, very quietly and more to leaders. And, you know, I think what you see, it's kind of interesting. One of the interesting stories, I think, of this campaign might be the eclipse of the power of religious conservatives. I mean, what you saw during the primaries was that religious conservatives, the leaders, wanted anyone but Mitt, right? They wanted, you know, they wanted Rick Perry and they wanted Santorum and they wanted virtually Newt Gingrich. They wanted anyone but Mitt Romney. And then they got Mitt Romney. And so they had to fall in line. But so they are falling in line, but Mitt Romney knows that he has could have an enthusiasm gap if he mentions, say, the specifics of Mormonism, because many evangelicals consider Mormonism a cult. And so he's staying away from the specifics of his faith and just emphasizing the values that he shares with evangelicals. So once again, he's kind of walking a tightrope.
You know, I did an article on this, Barbara, that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on the lack of visibility of religious issues in this campaign. Mm-hmm. And I was also struck by the lack of photo ops of, not only Romney going to services in the Mormon fashion, but President Obama doesn't seem to have those kind of photo ops at the church the way we did in previous presidencies.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I think you saw it more with President Bush, but you know, Ronald Reagan rarely went to church too, and the reason they give is that it is such a hassle with all the the Secret Service and everything having to clear the churches, and it's very, very difficult. So I think that's what the Obama campaign says as well, that it's a hassle. But, you know, there's another thing that I think is going on, and many people have said this to me. I can't climb inside Mr. Obama's head. But I think that there is a sense that he just doesn't want to exploit religion. You know, he's talked about religion. People know, well, a lot of people know that his faith, a lot of them
don't. A lot of people think he's a Muslim.
Yeah, right. Yeah, 17% of Americans, more than in 2008, believe that he's a Muslim. But I think there's a sense that he just doesn't want to use religion as a, you know, as a tool. And so he's just staying away from it.
Again, Barbara Bradley Haggerty, religion correspondent for NPR, with us from the nation's capital. Michael Cromarty is also with us from D.C. He's vice president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where he directs the Evangelicals in Civic Life and Faith Angle Forum programs. And Michael Cromarty, we heard Barbara Bradley Haggerty say that about three-quarters of the Evangelicals seem to be at this point behind Governor Romney, largely because of values?
Well, that's right. Yes, I think Evangelicals have finally, I think most of their leadership has figured out that they're not voting for bishop-in-chief or pastor-in-chief. They're voting for a commander-in-chief. And I think Barbara is absolutely right that Romney doesn't want to talk about his Mormonism. When he does talk about faith, he talks about my faith. He uses the generic, my faith motivates me to this and my faith motivates me to that. And as Barbara said, he never mentions the word Mormon, ever. There have been some photo ops of him coming out of Latter-day Saint churches, he and his wife, and he hasn't shied from that. But one thing I think we've forgotten here is that one reason religion is not a big issue in this campaign is because of the current state of the economy. I mean, I think all the advisors among both candidates must be saying over and over again in private meetings, you know, it's jobs, 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 and we can't bring up, as much as possible, we must avoid culture war issues, religious themes, and talk about jobs. And so I think that's one of the big factors that's going on here.
Well, does that mean that social issues have become less important than they were in the last campaign, things like same-sex marriage and birth control and abortion?
They're not off the table at all, but I think what the consultants are probably saying is that right now when people are so concerned, and all the focus groups tell us that people are concerned about work and jobs, and the social issues are just of less concern for people. Now, look, there are a lot of conservative Catholics and conservative evangelicals who are still concerned about those issues, and they can't be avoided, and a lot of those people have decided to vote for Governor Romney.
And yet I'm wondering, especially since we've heard, and this, of course, is partially perhaps the way the media disseminates information, that there's, if not enmity, certainly a great deal of distrust among evangelical Christians where Mormonism is concerned. And there's been, again, the analogy to John F. Kennedy, concern that when he ran by Protestants that somehow the Vatican would play a major role in shaping American domestic and foreign policy. There has been, you know, certainly rumblings about Mitt Romney being a lay pastor, about his being a regional president and having a central role in the Mormon Church, which suggests to some that maybe he would give more obedience to Mormon hierarchy than he would to being commander-in-chief or being the head of the United States, chief executive.
Well, there's no evidence that when he was governor that he took any orders from Salt Lake City. And people who worked with him say that he simply doesn't surround himself with members of the LDS Church. His staff is very, you know, diverse religiously. I think it's important that there's a great scholar at Notre Dame named David Campbell who's done some research. And one of the things he says about Mormons is that while they're distrusted by many Americans, the best way to get rid of that trust is to get to know a Mormon. And his survey data shows that the more people get to know members of the Latter-day Saint Church, the more these other issues are diffused and go away. And I think that's important. Now,
well, you think many of the evangelicals simply won't vote who don't aren't exposed to members of the Latter-day Saints?
No, I'm really eager after the election to see what the polling data says. I mean, I think more and more evangelicals are becoming comfortable with the idea of voting for a Mormon. And I think that's I'm really eager to see when it's all over, you know, how that breaks out, because just anecdotally, I'm finding more and more people who say, "Wow, he seems like a nice man and he's got a great family." And they're bracketing the theological issues to the side for now.
Again, Michael Cromarty with us from Washington, Vice President of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where he directs the Evangelicals in Civic Life and Faith Angle Forum programs. He's also editor of the book Religion and Politics in America. And Jim Donahue's here with us in studio. Well, faith is not quite, again, what it was 4 years ago, Jim.
It's true, Michael, and I want to agree with Barbara that the term and the explicit expression of religion and the focus on religion has not been as prevalent. But I think we need to make some basic distinctions here between a candidate's faith, which is, I would say, more fundamental than their membership or attachment in a religious group.
Fundamental not as in fundamentalism.
No, not fundamental. Fundamental meaning it's a basic, the organizing foundation of one's belief in God or one's sense of the world and how God, how they relate to God. And I think that's different than sort of attachment to beliefs or propositions or dogmas on the one hand, or membership. And so while religion is not being explicitly expressed and referenced, I think the notion of faith, as Michael suggested, is absolutely key and basic in how these candidates are presenting themselves. And so there, I think then you get into the basic distinction between how does one's faith express itself and become manifest through a set of social issues, ethical issues, if you will. And I think this is where the focus has been in this campaign, is on the ethical issues that I would argue derive in some basic way from...
Have their origins with faith.
Mm-hmm. And having said that, I'd like to sort of make somewhat of a distinction in what I think is sort of a key difference between Obama and Romney. If you presume that character is always a fundamental issue here about what kind of person is this, and there was an enormous attempt on Romney's part to present himself as a caring person, a compassionate person, and the same with Obama. I think there's two different ideas of what I call how we understand doing good or the doing of good works in each of these candidates. The first, and I would say Romney is much more exemplifies this, I think Romney sees doing good works as a kind of charity, that it's individual volunteers doing good works to others. And you see a lot of stories about his work with his congregation and helping people in his
It's also giving money. Tithing is part of Mormonism.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's the individual doing of good works voluntaristically. I think the other way of construing good works is to talk about good works as structural justice, or fairness as structural justice. And I think Obama has much more of a sense of doing good means creating the conditions and the structures that are going to create fairness, not so much just the individual giving to others.
The role of government being more...
Well, I think that's right.
Social justice.
That suggests that issues of social justice have more of a prominence in the agenda for what they will do as president. But these are two very, in my mind, very contrasting understandings of how you think about, or how different candidates think about doing good in the world. And I think the roots of those lie in some basic way in religious faith and religious beliefs.
Well, let me bring our listeners into this and get your thoughts about religion and how it's playing a role, either overtly or more nuanced and subtle, and what your thoughts are in general. In fact, we welcome your questions or comments, and we welcome your involvement in the program. It's live and it's interactive, so feel free to join us now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. And maybe the bigger question is, how important is it to you? You know, you've got 20% of Americans who have no religious affiliation, and you've got certainly a lot of divisiveness that's still unfortunately out there. And yet, as Tom Friedman said in a recent article that I thought was quite thoughtful in the New York Times, this is a stew that, unlike most countries in the ability to have someone, let's say, of the Mormon faith running, well, for that matter, against someone who's an African American. That in itself, we never would have imagined it, say, 15, 20 years ago, to put it mildly. Our toll-free number, again, you can join us at, is 866-733-6786. There are a number of other ways that you can voice your opinions or make them known. Join us with questions or comments. Email us, forum@kqed.org, or post your questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page. And, of course, you can also tweet us, and our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. And we have Jim Donahue with us, President and Professor of Ethics at the Graduate Theological Union, Michael Cromartie, who's Vice President of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and Barbara Bradley Haggerty, Religion Correspondent for NPR. And Barbara, I just saw the new, well, Pew results, which I'm sure you saw too, about Latinos, which play a very important role in this election, and the division between Latino Catholics who are behind President Obama and those evangelicals, evangelical Protestants, who are behind, well, let's say it's more split. There are more behind Obama than there are the evangelicals. Right. What do we make out of that? What do we also make out of the fact that when we're talking about Catholics, we're talking about really two very distinct type of Catholics with Biden and Ryan?
Right, right. I think the Latinos actually reflect exactly what Jim Donahue was just talking about, which is this distinction of how faith makes you act. And so so we see with, for example, I mean, what's really cool about this election is we have two Catholics who are vice presidential candidates. And when you look at those two Catholics, you realize that we are seeing in this election a fight between kind of faith values that we've never seen before. So you've got Joe Biden, who is a social justice Catholic, working class. You know, a lot of Latinos are appeal and pro-immigration. So a lot of Latinos would favor that ticket. Then you've got Paul Ryan, who is, like Romney, favoring charity, for example, as the way to help the poor. So he, before he became vice presidential candidate, he said that his Catholic faith, and specifically the doctrine of subsidiarity, was what inspired his budget. And subsidiarity is this notion, in his view, that government shouldn't be helping, but private organizations and charities and churches should be on the front line of helping the poor. And so what you see is you know, Mr. Obama having a more an attitude that we are our brother's keeper, we are our sister's keeper, we need to help those who can't help themselves. And then you've got the other ticket kind of saying, no, charity is private and it should first come from private individuals. And so I think it's kind of interesting that we see that contrast more starkly in this election than we've ever seen before.
Yeah, I wonder about the effect of Dinesh D'Souza's film, where President Obama's brother was not necessarily taken care of by the president or given the benefit of help. At least the brother in Kenya's half-brother said that. I'm also looking at some tweets here. Raj tweets, church and state definitely need to get away from the health issues. At this day and age, we know how to take care of ourselves. The GOP is pushing so very hard to control one's personal health issues. You want to get government permission for a treatment. Another tweet from a listener who says all religions teach the same ethics. While it can be a personal guide, a president should not impose it on the broader population. And just a quick question, actually for you, Jim Donahue, maybe you can help us. Craig asks, if Romney wins, any idea if he'll be sworn in with the Bible or with the Book of Mormon?
Yeah, very interesting. I would presume he would go a little bit more mainstream on this and use the Bible. I think one of the things that Mormonism has been grappling with in recent history is sort of moving from kind of a sectarian idea of Mormonism as a sect versus being much more of a mainstream religion. So I presume that he would use a Bible, but I could be wrong.
Well, apropos of that, another listener, April, writes, correcting me, misinformation about religion can definitely affect perception in this election. In your introduction, Michael, you said President Obama described President Obama as a Christian and Mitt Romney as a Mormon. I thought, well, there's a problem right there. Mormon is a nickname. The real name of the religion is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and the church is based on the teachings of Christ, and it's set up the same way his church was organized. We follow the teachings of Christ. To me, that's Christian. We'll return, and we'll hear from more of you. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. There has certainly been a great deal of talk about the economy in this presidential race, foreign policy, tax plans, but where religion is seems to be the central question that we're grappling with here, and how do religions play into the campaigns of both President Obama and Governor Romney, if at all, and does faith affect their views on controversial issues such as abortion and gay marriage? Well, and do voters really care what religion their candidates follow? Asking all those questions and more with our guest, Bradley Haggerty, who is with us from Washington, religion correspondent for NPR, and Michael Cromartie, also with us from Washington, vice president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. where he directs the Evangelicals and Civic Life and Faith Angle Forum programs, and Dr. Jim Donahue here in studio, President and Professor of Ethics at the Graduate Theological Union. Before I go to your calls, I want to get you on record, if I could, Michael Cromartie, about this split. Jim Donahue may want to speak a little bit more about it. Maybe division, dichotomy, whatever you want to call it, between social or cultural conservatism and social justice.
Well, I think I agree with Dr. Donahue on those points, except to say we must really quickly say that Governor Romney is not a libertarian. He is not an anti-government. If we remember during the campaign, the Republican primaries, I mean, he was seen as a kind of a moderate, squishy, moderate Republican. And I would say Paul Ryan is closer to being a libertarian than Governor Romney.
Would you say Governor Romney is a Christian, Michael Cromartie?
You know, the way I would, there's a theologian that I respect, Richard Mao, out there at Fuller Seminary in California, who says that he thinks that Mormonism is not Christian, but he knows individual Mormons who are. And I think that's an important distinction. Mormonism, however, right now is working very hard, and some of the scholars I've talked to in the LDS Church are working very hard to say that they are part of the branch of historic Christianity.
And how do you read this division? I mean, it's pretty nuanced, but the idea that maybe Mitt Romney is representing charity and the individual, not necessarily from a libertarian standpoint, but, you know, the individual contributing to charities and expressing faith perhaps in that way, as opposed to President Obama, who's talking about more community organizing and community doing good for each other, brothers and sisters and the like.
Well, I think it must be said that one thing about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is they really do promote charity and you could even say a form of works righteousness. They are very impressive when it comes to take caring of at least the welfare of even their own people and their own churches. And so Governor Romney's record in personal charity outshines all the candidates. And as we know, their personal giving. But when it comes to the role of government, as I wanted to say, I mean, I think he's a conservative Republican, but I don't think he's a libertarian. I think he thinks the state has a role. I think he thinks the state has a role with the underclass and that there should be a safety net. The argument really among Republicans is how big that role should be. And as I say, there are some, even to the right of Paul Ryan, who think it should have no role when it comes to charity. I don't think that's the view of Governor Romney.
Jim Donahue, let's go to you on this again. You want to flesh this out a little bit more in terms of the vision you made before?
When you look at the faith that organizes one's religious views, I think there's two different notions of personhood, of human nature that really are embedded in these two candidates. I think one is a very individualistic notion, which has theological roots, that salvation is between you and your personal God. We are individuals. We are atomized in some ways, and we're isolated. And yes, the whole point is to engage others and to be to create the conditions for doing good and making the world better from an individualistic perspective. I think the other way of construing it, I think this is much more where Obama's theological and faith roots come out, is that it's much more communitarian, that individuals are not just one with their God, but individuals are theologically and religiously understood as integrally and constitutively bound with others, and we have intrinsic obligations and responsibilities to go with that, which leads – each of these leads, I think, to two different types of platforms, if you will. And if you look at the Republican platform, the Democratic platform, I think that they're reflected in this. But I think they're two different one's more individualistic understanding that flows from their faith and their notion of salvation, and the other, I think, is much more community-focused or communitarian, which argues for more of a basic solidarity between people. And that's intrinsic to how we understand our relationship to God and one another.
Well, let me bring our callers into this, and we'll begin, Kyle, with you. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Okay.
My question is, I am an atheist, and I also have some very, very close friends who are Mormon and obviously close friends that are Christian. I participate in contributions to charitable foundations. I choose secular, educational, youth groups, things like that. But as a as an atheist, why is the emphasis so heavy on religion in a campaign where we're supposed to be residing in a secular, you know, separation of church and state society?
Well, it's not that heavy as it was before. That seems to be an undergirding thesis here to this morning's discussion. But Barbara Bradley Haggerty, perhaps you can respond, if you would, to Kyle and also to a listener named Loretta, who wrote on our Facebook page, how long is it going to take to elect an atheist? Whatever agnostics or non-theists have been in office, they have had to be closeted about it.
Right, right. Well, I think Kyle is brings up a really good point, and it actually is a point that both parties need to listen to, because atheists, as you mentioned, Michael, or not atheists, unaffiliated, now comprise 20% of the population. That is a really, really large group of people, and both parties can't ignore them anymore. Now, as it happens, polls suggest that the unaffiliated tend to be far more liberal than religious, you know, folks who are religious. On the other hand, polls show that they say they are less likely to vote. And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting conundrum. But both parties need to look at this group of people, because it's the fastest growing religious segment in the country. The other question, how long will it take to elect an atheist? I got to tell you, I think it's going to take a long time. I mean, atheists are the least trusted, and polls show that atheists are the least trusted and least appealing candidates among the American public. I mean, that can be, you know, you can whatever you want to say about that. That may not be very nice, but polls show consistently that they will vote for almost anyone else, including Muslims, before they will vote for an atheist.
And here's Necco joining us. Good morning, Necco.
Good morning. Thank you for hosting the Red Show, Michael. I'm quite welcome the fact that there's less discussion about in the current campaign. God has nothing to do with politics. I'm tired of hearing God bless America. God bless Canada. God bless Burkina Faso. God bless Slovenia. God bless Italy. God doesn't bless countries. God bless his people. And the less the candidates talk about God, the more respect they have, at least in my view.
Well, I would ask how you know what God blesses, if you divine that knowledge. But Jim, you want to comment?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons everyone has some organizing views of that are foundational to them. That's called religious faith for those who believe. But what we're trying to tease out in these candidates is what their foundational faith, what that leads them to, what types of views of the world, what type of views of personhood, what views of society, views of the role of government. And these are contained in each of these deeper sense of faith. But I would agree with you, it's not a question of using the notion of God to bless this, that, and the other thing. It's the question, the more important question in my mind is, how do we really understand what makes a candidate tick from the view of their religious faith?
Question, Michael Cromarty, for you. Bill wants to know, do you think evangelicals are voting against Obama rather than for a Mormon?
Oh, I think there's a lot of that for sure. But I think if they're going to vote for Governor Romney because they, you know, they resonate more with his values and policies than they obviously do with President Obama. But one point I really wanted to highlight here is, and why this program, this topic is so important, is that there's a lot of survey data that shows that the American people, by over 75%, want their president to be what they call a person of faith. And the Pew Forum did this survey a couple of years ago, most of the people didn't care what kind of faith. They just wanted him to be a person of faith. Now, that's very interesting. If that's true, ironically, here we have a situation where both candidates are not talking about their faith, when almost three-quarters of Americans want the person in office to be a person of faith. For the life of me, if I was an advisor to the Obama campaign, I would have said for the last 5 or 6 months, Mr. President, you and the First Lady must go to church every Sunday. You really must be seen going in and out of a house of worship. Because for some reason, the American people want that to be the case. And I would have thought it was politically wise to do that.
Well, here's an email from Scott who says that religion is being left out of the campaign prompts two words from me that come to mind, and pardon the religious connotations, glory hallelujah. Jen tweets, Martin Amos said it best. How can Romney go to Jerusalem as leader of the free world when he thinks the Garden of Eden was in Missouri? That was actually said on this program by British novelist Martin Amos. And Matt asks, the Book of Mormon has a long story without archaeological evidence to support any of it, which makes it different from Christianity, which does relate to history. You think this makes Romney reluctant to let his faith become a live issue? And it's a good question, and one I would couple with something else that I'd like to direct to you, Barbara Bradley Haggerty, especially since you've been sort of covering the Mormon or the Church of Latter-day Saints and how this all plays in, and looking back at the 180-year history of that church. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of influence in the American electorate of popular culture, of you know, South Park and Big Love and, well, the Book of Mormon, frankly, in terms of how, but also Donnie and Marie. You know, what could be more American, I suppose, in many Americans' minds than Donnie and Marie? But those things are all kind of conflated with Mormonism, aren't they?
They are. They are. And Mormons, it's kind of their worst nightmare, to tell you the truth. I mean, in this Mormon moment, the church, you know, is happy that people learn about Mormonism, but many Mormons are kind of cringing at the spotlight being cast upon them. I mean, South Park, you're right, and the Book of Mormon musical. And, you know, and I have to say that what's really interesting about this time is that we're getting to look at a religion as it is evolving in real time. Like Christianity, you know, we have these stories, Jesus walked on the water and he was resurrected and all of that. It's become part of the culture. But we look at things like Joseph Smith looked through peepstones at golden plates and, you know, decided that and learned that the Garden of Eden was in Jackson County, Missouri, or the Jews came here, ancient Jews came here in 700 B.C., And we look at that now in our modern media and go, what are, you know, are you kidding?
And so, what about the underwear and the planets?
Oh, I know, and the planets and all of that. And so what's happening is that the Mormons they tend not to discount or disregard. They tend not to revoke policies or doctrines except for polygamy and not allowing blacks to be in the priesthood. Those were two cases where they actually overtly revoke them. But what they tend to do is kind of let policies, let doctrines go softly into that dark night. You know, they haven't mentioned the planets, that the idea that each person becomes like God and gets his own planet. They haven't mentioned that since 1978. When, you know, young Mormons, educated Mormons are looking at the historicity of the Book of Mormon and they realize that, you know, there's no evidence that Jews came here in 700 BC. What do they do with that? Well, what Mormons are trying to do is they're trying to say, we're going to take the spiritual part that resonates with us and realize that God works through flawed human beings. So if Joseph Smith got some things wrong, hey, you know what? I get things wrong too. And so what's happening is they're trying to evolve and this religion. But at the same time, the spotlight is being shined on them because of Mitt Romney, and it's a pretty uncomfortable situation for a lot of Mormons.
Well, and speaking of Mormons and Jews, it's pretty uncomfortable for many Jews to think of Mormons going out and baptizing survivors of the Holocaust, right. Which is what they've been doing. Jim Donahue.
It's interesting in terms of voting patterns. I'm very curious as to where the Catholic vote is going to, how that is going to be manifested. It was interesting to see Biden and Ryan go at it as two Catholics, both each appealing to very different visions of what Catholicism is. These are not competing visions, but these are distinct visions. Biden much more going to the tradition of social, the social teachings and social justice, and Ryan.
There's also a class difference between the two, too. Well, I mean, Biden's working class Delaware, and
that's right,
Ryan
right.
is Wisconsin bourgeoisie, basically.
But it's interesting to see how Catholics are going to interpret what's Catholic about these candidates. There's a very famous book written a number of years ago by a theologian named Avery Dulles, where he talks about models of the church, where the church is not one particular model necessarily. It has multiple models. And he talks about the church as an institution, church as a community of faith, church as sacrament, church as herald or prophet, and church as servant. And he spells out in a very provocative way what it means to understand the Catholic Church or the church in general as reflecting those particular models. But it seems to me that there's a number of different ways that the Catholic vote can go, and people are going to say who are the real Catholics here, or what does it mean to be Catholic in terms of voting? And I think there's very differentiated ways and justifiably differentiated ways of understanding that, and it doesn't all reduce just to a litmus test on certain social issues.
And once again, Jim Donahue, who is the president and professor of ethics at the Graduate Theological Union. Barbara, you want in here?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to mention that the Catholic vote is so important as well. I mean, over the last 40 years, whoever won the Catholic vote won the popular vote as well. Mr. Gore won the popular vote, and he won the Catholic vote, but he didn't win the presidency. So it's actually a really, really critical vote. What's been interesting is that Mr. Obama, until recently, and I haven't seen like a really, really recent poll, but until recently, he had closed the gap of with Mr. Romney used to have a very large gap among white Catholics. And what's been happening is Mr. Obama has been closing that gap to where they were really dead even. Now, I haven't seen the recent polls, and so that may have shifted a little bit. But the momentum was in favor of Mr. Obama over the last few months.
And a question, if I may, to you, Michael Cromartie, from a listener named Dan, who says, when I joined an evangelical church recently, I was surprised how church members viewed Mormons as cultists. That said, now that Romney is the Republican nominee, they'll overwhelmingly vote for him because of the sanctity of life issue. It seems to me that many evangelicals unknowingly fall into Romney's 47% because they are the working poor and pay no federal income tax. Besides retirees and military personnel, Romney's 47% includes many Republican evangelicals. Why haven't the Democrats pointed this out?
I'm not sure why. I mean, there's a lot of things I'm worrying about the Obama campaign, as I mentioned earlier. But and by the way, most evangelicals are not working class, and that's a myth. But the truth of the matter is that even the language of cult has been, you might say it's convenient, all the evangelical periodicals I read, the word cult is being. Well, even Billy Graham's website recently took Mormonism.
Yeah, they removed that.
They removed it. Now, one can quickly say this is all for political expediency because they like Romney's policies more than Obama's. But there's been a serious dialogue and debate going on behind the scenes between evangelical theologians and members of the Latter-day Saint Church about the true nature of Christianity, and it's been a very healthy dialogue. As Barbara knows from her reporting, there's a real churning going on in the leadership of the LDS Church about what they really do believe as core doctrines and what they don't really believe anymore.
Barbara Bradley Haggerty, let me go to you with a remark from another listener, Noel, who says, I wish Romney's good deeds, generosity, etc., in terms of whether or not it's observed outside of the Mormon church would be discussed. Does he help any group outside of his own church? And I'd find that the opposite of what most Americans believe is happening.
Yeah, and I'd like to see more of his tax returns to figure that out. I actually don't know the answer to that. My instinct, and please tell me if I'm the other guests, tell me if I'm wrong. But my instinct is that it's basically been within the Mormon Church that he's given his charity, and so it would be interesting to hear him talk about giving charity in a broader way. I may be wrong on that, so I have to put out that caution. I don't know who he gives to, but I know that he gives a lot to the Mormon Church.
That's an important distinction, Barbara. I think that what I was trying to get at with this notion, distinction between charity and justice, is that one can give to one's own community. The question is, and so giving can be communal. It's not just individualistic. But the question is, what is the extent of that community? Do you talk about multiple communities? Do you talk about how far the giving extends? And I think the notion of a communitarian notion of justice extends that structurally in a very particular way. The other issue I wanted to just sort of underscore, referring back to the Pew study about religion in America, the generational distinctions within religion are huge. And you can see this within all religious denominations, that what those over 60, over 50 claim with regard to what they believe as part and parcel of being part of a religious group versus what the generational, the under 30 generation believes is are very, very distinctive. And so every denomination—
Just as they are on social issues.
Right. Exactly right. And just as they are in terms of even identifying as affiliating. The Pew study says that 32% of adults under 30 say that they're religiously unaffiliated, while only 9% of those age 65 and older.
Well, if you read Robert Putnam, you realize that it's becoming more of a kind of salad, you know, a little bit of Zen here and a little bit of Hinduism there and maybe some of my traditional Christianity or Judaism. Here's Francis who writes, I'm pleased that religion is not being discussed more frequently. I thought that there's supposed to be a separation of church and state, not a marriage of the two, and it's nice to have one group's religious beliefs shoved down. It is it's nice not to have one group's religious beliefs shoved down our throats. In our history classes, we studied that our forefathers fought for freedom of religious beliefs, not the freedom to believe what one group says is the only true religion. Let me bring another caller on here, and that's you, Bob. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Morning.
And everyone. Great program, as usual. So just in brief, I investigated or considered joining, as normal people say, the Mormon Church in the 70s at UC Davis for about 3 years, and I did not join for some very good reasons. As best I can tell, and I've tried to follow their organization, they are basically a cult, and back in the 70s, many of their members had mental health issues. Romney has not taken an oath of separation of church and state, and I would suspect that if he becomes president, he will have a change of color. And I can tell you, this is a really big deal for the Mormon Church.
Governor Romney has certainly been identified with changes, characteristic
Indeed.
Of his. But what about that, Barbara Bradley Haggerty? I mean, first of all, the characterization of cult, as we said earlier, Reverend Billy Graham took it off of his website and gave a kind of sanction to the Mormons as not being a cult. And yet, I think the caller expresses some fears that are palpable and out there.
Right, right. I mean, when you look at the technical definition of a cult, you know, it's some of the things are that you have your own sacred, the Mormons have their own sacred book, and they had their own charismatic leader, and they added to scripture. And so that falls into the definition of a theological cult. But cult is such a, you know, it's
Christianity was
terrible,
a cult.
Right, right. And it's got terrible connotations, so people just stay away from it. But would Mr. Romney bring his beliefs into office? It's hard for me to imagine that happening.
It didn't happen when he was governor.
Yeah.
That's the key point.
Right. It's hard to imagine that happening. And as Michael also said, he doesn't surround himself with Mormons in his inner circle. And so I would have a hard time believing that he's actually going to bring his particular faith agenda. You know, I mean, have a particular faith agenda. I think that he'll bring the values that he develops in his faith to his office, to the office. But I don't think, if he's elected, but I don't think he's going to bring his specific faith doctrines.
Well, there was an article in the New Republic, Michael Cromartie, I don't know if you saw it, but essentially it said that we really don't know when we compare, say, candidate Romney, when he was governor of Massachusetts, what might be his predilections once he became president of the United States in terms of the upper hierarchy of the Mormon Church and his devotion and his, frankly, obedience to those in the upper hierarchy?
Well, he could have shown that same kind of obedience when he was governor. And from all the reporters and people that I know that have worked with Governor Romney, it's just simply not been the case.
Let me bring another caller on here.
No, and I should just say that it's not really a hierarchy in the way that the Catholic Church is a hierarchy. I mean,
right.
There are some paid staff members and they're the apostles in Salt Lake City, but everyone else is lay, and they're lay ministers, and they rotate offices, and so it's not quite the same thing. I think he listens to the folks in Salt Lake City, but I'm not sure that there's the same kind of hierarchical pressure.
Sarah, you're on.
Transparency issues.
Hi, thanks, Michael. I just wanted to make a comment about something you said about whether or not religion matters to the voters. I think that the religion of the candidate doesn't matter to me so much as the whether or not that religion leads into an ignorance of the people of the United States. In the first presidential debate, Mitt Romney had said, we are a nation that believes we are all children of the same God. And that's just not true. I mean, we have this, you know, 20% that is unaffiliated, and we have many, many different religions that have extreme different views about their God. And so that's what turns me off, is just the ignorance of someone who would believe that we are a nation.
Well, here's Mark who tweets, I'm part of the 20%, no religious affiliation. I don't care if the president's Catholic, Mormon, or Buddhist, just don't force your beliefs on all. Jim Donahue, you want to say something?
Yeah, I think one of the requirements for any religious denomination, for any religious political figure, is to translate their religious beliefs, their faith, their denominational commitments, to translate them into categories that are accessible and debatable, that are based on rationality, that are part and parcel of a pluralistic society. And so any religion has to do that. Any candidate, any religious person in public office has to be able to give sort of what I would call the public warrants for their beliefs, and to present them in ways that allow for a public and rational discourse about them. And that's why I would argue that religion and ethics are intrinsically bound together, because ethics typically is a language that manifests what is at the core of one's religious faith.
Well, I'm glad we had this public and rational discussion. I think actually it's been most illuminating. I want to thank all of you who were here with us. Dr. Jim Donahue, again, is president and professor of ethics with the Graduate Theological Union, the largest partnership of seminaries and graduate schools in the United States. Thank you for being with us, Jim.
My pleasure.
And thank you, Michael Cromarty, Vice President of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He directs the Evangelicals and Civic Life and Faith Angle Forum programs and is editor of the book Religion and Politics in America, formerly served on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom.
Thank you, Michael.
And we also thank Barbara Bradley Haggerty, religion correspondent for NPR, who also joined us from Washington, D.C. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Great to have you. We hope the hurricane will miss you. And thank you, our listeners. Glad to have you with us for these 2 hours of Forum. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and we had production help from Susan Britton and Tina Larberg and Suki Lewis, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.